Good morning. It is good to see you this morning. We're glad you're here. Am I going to try it anymore? We're going to get there. You know what I learned? I learned it's important to be grateful no matter what happens with a microphone. That's what I learned. Isn't that right? We've got our top-notch tech guys on this. We are going to figure this out. We're going to solve the problem. It may be 2018, but we're going to get there. We're going to figure it out. In the meantime, I've got a good microphone right here, and I'm going to stick right with it as we go. If you have your Bible, open up to Matthew chapter 4. I'm going to start in verse 1. Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. After fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. The tempter came to him and said, "If you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread." Jesus answered, "It is written, man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God." I want to start this morning by reading a poem from this book. It was one of my favorites growing up in elementary. Maybe some of you are familiar with some of the poems of Shel Silverstein. And I want to read the poem entitled, "Hungry Mungry." Hungry Mungry sat at supper, took his knife and spoon and fork, ate a bowl of mushroom soup, ate a slice of roasted pork, ate a dozen stewed tomatoes, 27 deviled eggs, 15 shrimps, 9 baked potatoes, 32 fried chicken legs, a shank of lamb, a boiled ham, 2 bowls of grits, some black-eyed peas, 4 chocolate shakes, 8 angel cakes, 9 custard pies with Munster cheese, 10 pots of tea, and after he had eaten all that he was able, he poured some broth on the tablecloth, and he ate the kitchen table. His parents said, "Oh, Hungry Mungry, stop these silly jokes." Mungry opened up his mouth and, gulp, he ate his folks. And then he went and ate his house, all the bricks and wood, and then he ate up all the people in the neighborhood. Up came 20 angry policemen shouting, "Stop and cease." Mungry opened up his mouth and, gulp, he ate the police. Soldiers came with tanks and guns, said Mungry, "They can't harm me." He just smiled and licked his lips and ate the U.S. Army. The president sent all his bombers. Mungry still was calm, put his head back, gulped the planes, gobbled up the bomb. He ate his town and ate the city, ate and ate, and then he said, "I think I'll eat the whole United States." So he ate Chicago first and munched the water tower. And then he chewed on Pittsburgh, but he found it rather sour. He ate New York and Tennessee and all of Boston town, then drank the Mississippi River just to wash it down. And when he had eaten every state, each puppy, boy, and girl, he wiped his mouth upon his sleeve and went to eat the world. He started with the moon. He ate the Egypt pyramids and every church in Rome and all the grass in Africa and all the ice in Nome. He ate each hill and green Brazil. And then, to make things worse, he decided for dessert he'd eat the universe. He started with the moon and stars, and soon he was done. He gulped the clouds, he sipped the wind, he gobbled up the sun. Then, sitting there in the cold, dark air, he started to nibble his feet, and then his legs, and then his hips, and then his neck, and then his lips, till he sat there just gnashing his teeth, because nothing was nothing was left to eat. Okay, two questions for you. Maybe you've got a question yourself, like, why did you just read Hungry Mungry? Two questions. One, does this in any way resemble Thanksgiving Day for you? Like, by the end, feel a little like Hungry Mungry. But question number two, and this is the one that's a little more serious. Do you ever feel like maybe we live in sort of a Hungry Mungry kind of world? In a Hungry Mungry kind of society? And it's not just about the food we eat, although we could certainly include that, but it is a world, a society of ceaseless consumption, of endless appetites, a world of non-stop efforts to curb our hunger, to fill deep voids and find meaning, and yet at the bottom of everything we consume, so many of us are still hungry. In the words of the great theologians, the WHO, we still can't get no satisfaction. We're just not there. So it may be kind of cruel, right after Thanksgiving, and as we head into the rest of the holiday season, to have a lesson on fasting. But maybe there's something to it. And not just food fasts, although that's going to be a part of the conversation, but there's so much more. There's so many more ways that we're trying to fill our lives with consumption and finding in the end that our real hunger and our real thirst is not satisfied. I'm challenged by these words from Marjorie Thompson. You'll see them on the screen. We need disciplines like fasting because we have come to relate to food, drink, sex, money, recognition, and many other things in life, not as lovely gifts to be enjoyed in moderation and gratitude, but as objects of consumption to fill emotional needs. When what we consume is consuming us, and what we possess is possessing us, the only way back to health and balance is to refrain from or restrict our using those things that have control over us. Fasting was a discipline that was practiced prominently in Scripture, in the Old Testament, but also in the New Testament. And for a lot of different reasons, sometimes people practiced it during times of repentance and confession. Sometimes it was during times of deep anguish and a sense of loss. Sometimes it was for guidance during times when people of faith were seeking the wisdom of God and the leading of God. Sometimes it was times of preparation. For Israel, sometimes preparation for battle. For Paul and Barnabas, it was preparation for a missionary journey. It was a practice taken up by Jesus, by Paul. Faithful Jews in the New Testament time, the first century, practiced twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. And we actually have an ancient document from the early church that was after the New Testament canon was sort of formed, but it was near the end of the first century, beginning of the second century, called the Didache, which talks about early Christians fasting twice a week. But they moved from Tuesday, Thursday to Wednesday, Friday. It continued to be practiced for a long time, but I probably don't have to tell you that in many Christian circles now, it's fallen into disuse. It's fallen out of favor. And not only has it fallen into disuse, but there is a decent amount of disdain connected to fasting. And I get that. When I've talked about spiritual disciplines at different times and taught on this at different times, I have had people, and I'm not making this up, come up when they learn that's the topic, and they'll lean in and they'll say something like, "Are you going to teach on fasting? Because I really don't like fasting." And I don't ever have anyone say that about prayer. "Are you going to teach on prayer? Because between you and me, I think it's highly overrated. I really don't like prayer." No one says that about prayer. People don't say that about Bible study, but it's always open season for fasting. I even had one person send me an anonymous note that said, "If you preach on fasting, it will be the last sermon you ever preach." Can you believe that? Don't believe that, because I just made that up. But people do not, they don't like fasting. They're uncomfortable with fasting, and I can understand that. If you're promoting your life group at your house, you never see in the bulletin someone say, "Come to our house for fun, fellowship, and fasting." That's not the one you add. Bring your favorite nothing, because we're fasting. You don't have to bring anything. There's always food involved. We don't like fasting. I get it. It's not that I like fasting. I'm not sure that we're supposed to like fasting. But still, in our hungry-mongery kind of world, that never-ending hunger that drives so many of us, I can't help but think that this kind of discipline might just be a big part of the cure to what ails us. So I want to invite you into the opportunity to practice the discipline of fasting. And first, I want to tell you a few things that fasting is not. And the first one is, fasting is not commanded in the New Testament. It is invited. As I mentioned, it is widely practiced. And you could even argue that it is assumed by Jesus, because when he talks about fasting in the Sermon on the Mount, he says, "When you fast," there's an anticipation that it will happen. When the disciples come and say, "Hey, some people are wondering why we don't fast," Jesus says, "Well, you don't fast when the bridegroom is around, but you'll do it afterward when he's gone." There's an assumption, but there's not the expectation. So this is an invitation. This is a matter of get to, and it can be good to, but it is not a matter of have to. What Jesus does say is fasting is not for show. So when he talks about fasting, that's where he goes with it. Matthew 6:16, "When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show men they are fasting. I tell you the truth, you have received your reward in full." This is in a series of things which Jesus talks about. Don't pray so others can see you. Don't give to the poor so others can see you. Don't fast just so that others can see you. Any godly practice done mostly for the attaboys and the affirmations and the likes and the retweets when you humble brag about what you've done, you've gotten your reward. You got what you sought, and that was the recognition from others. And maybe I shouldn't have to say this, but I probably do need to say this, especially in our day and age. Fasting is not about weight loss. Now, if it's done right, there are actually some health benefits to it. But it's not the new Atkins or South Beach or Paleo or Liquid or whatever new fad diet. And I probably also need to say, if you're not sure if you're healthy enough to fast, consult with a physician. Ask your doctor. You got to make sure that your body can do this. There is a handout in the foyer. You will see on one of the shelves outside on the back, as you go out the back, You'll see what I have every week, a handout with some ideas that will tell you some things to do if you're thinking about fasting, both some things that you do beforehand, some ways that you approach that from a physical standpoint and a spiritual standpoint as far as how you would do that. You will also receive this if you get our emails. You will receive this at 11:15 this morning. That's when they're scheduled to go out. And so you'll see that. There's some helpful information. Then there's more I can fill you in on. Like, if you are going to try a food fast, don't do what I did in college one of the first times when I tried to fast. And that was gorge yourself before you fast and then gorge yourself when it's over. Your body will tell you pretty quickly that is not a smart idea. That is not the way you enter into or exit out of a fast. And there's more information that you can look at. But there are also some non-food fasts that I would invite you to think about. The first one is this, and this is something we talked about when we talked about unplugging a couple of months ago, and that is a voluntary restriction of media. Let me encourage you to be intentional from time to time to turn off all electronic devices. Stow them under the seat or in the overhead compartment. Get them away. Unplug a little more often to plug back into the people around you, to plug back in to God. Find times to restrict all of the media intake. Or here's another voluntary restriction fast that I would invite you into, and that is a voluntary restriction of purchasing. Now, this one may also seem a little cruel coming at this time of year, but to me, it is a helpful time to remember that some of what is consuming us is all of the purchasing that we do all of the time. We are coming right after Black Friday and Charcoal Thursday, now that they've opened up stores on Thanksgiving, and Cyber Monday's tomorrow, and I'm getting emails saying Black Friday's not done and Cyber Monday has already started on Sunday, and there's an endless reminder that we can buy, we can buy, we can buy, and I love a bargain. And I love to see what electronic device that I don't need that I still might be tempted to buy and convince myself that the one that's working perfectly might not quite have the resolution that I really deserve if I just think about it long enough. There is a sea of stuff all around us that is calling for us to go get it, go buy it, and see if that might make us feel better or someone else feel better. And there's some good things about that, but there's some not so good things about that too, like the fact that we've got a rampant debt problem in our nation. And some of you may be struggling with that. But here's what I want to suggest. There are more questions that we ought to ask from time to time than, can I afford it? Do I want it? And is it on a decent sale? We might want to ask some other questions like, are these purchases about filling voids or fitting in or fighting boredom or seeking approval or buying approval? Because in our hungry-mongry, consumer-driven land, distortions of God's good gifts are everywhere. And so we may have to choose to voluntarily restrict purchasing, even if we can afford it and we want it. Because there might be other lessons, other developments in our heart that we need. That it can help teach us to rely on God instead of things to bring us fulfillment and meaning. And make us aware of our great abundance and others' poverty, or lead us to find contentment in what we have instead of endless covetousness for what we lack, or help us to become better stewards of our resources and God's resources that He's blessed our world with, or convince us to look for more ways to spend generously and graciously for others instead of just for self, or even just for me and mine. Now again, this is an invitation. It's not an expectation. So all of these possibilities and suggestions I've thrown out, it doesn't mean that you're a lesser of a Christian if you don't do them. But if you do choose to engage of some form of fasting, and I would encourage you to do so, there's definite benefits. Part of the benefits are this: fasting creates a keener awareness of the difference between needs and wants. Because what we think we need to survive and what we really need to survive, there can be a huge difference between those. And fasting can help put that in perspective and remind us, as Jesus says, that we cannot live on bread alone, or drink, or clothes purchases, or the latest electronics, or media, or all the other things that we look to sustain us. And fasting creates a deeper sensitivity to the needs of others. Listen to what Isaiah says in Isaiah 58:6. Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke. Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them, and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. Something interesting that happens if you feel the hunger pangs of going without for a brief period. It is hard not to have greater empathy for those for whom that's not a choice. It is a reality. Very rarely in our land of plenty do many of us go without and know the feeling of real, genuine hunger. And when we experience real, genuine hunger, it's hard not to have a greater sense of compassion for those for whom that is a regular occurrence. Real hunger, or real food insecurity. And the same can occur with all of the other purchases that we have. And that also frees up some resources to be shared with others. Even if it's small, what we would have spent on ourselves can be shared with others. And next, fasting creates a greater amount of space to be filled by God. So for many of us, one of the greatest obstacles to spending time with God and focusing on the presence of God is time, is busyness. And one of the practices that goes along with fasting is using those times that you would have spent eating or shopping or consuming media to instead find time to spend with God and more quality time to spend with others. Instead of having our time filled up with consuming more food or more sports or more movies, we find those moments freed up for God. And fasting creates a sharper recognition of our dependence on God. So here's the thing. If you practice, for example, a food fast, you don't have to tell yourself to be hungry, do you? Your body starts to cry out for food. Your body starts to cry out for something to drink if it's been a little while since you've had something to drink. But I'm wondering, how many of us have our spirits cry out within us when we've gone without the presence of God for a while, without focusing on the presence of God, without times of prayer or times in the Word or times with others. Fasting reminds us of this deep hunger and thirst that we have within us that too often is dulled. We numb it. We hide it. We run away from it. And fasting can create again a hunger for the bread of life and for the living water, the one, the only one who can satisfy. It was years ago I read a piece by Mark Buchanan. And he described these huge billboards along major roadways in British Columbia. And they had black and white photos of cars that had been in horrible accidents. And the photos showed cars that were mangled and bent up, and there was fire, and there were searchlights, and there were police car lights, and there was a caption underneath those pictures of mangled cars, and the caption said, "Speed is killing us. Slow down and live." And Buchanan wrote, "It could be just as beneficial if the billboards were filled with pictures of our lives. Quote, mindless and fruitless preoccupations, our depressions and ragings over not getting our way, our ceaseless and insatiable need for more and more and more, and all the boredom and all the blaming. And underneath those pictures of that kind of life," he said, "I would like to put this caption, consumption is killing us. Go fast and live." That's my invitation to all of us this morning. It's not a command, it's not an expectation, but it is an invitation to a reorientation of life, remembering the only thing that sustains us. Go fast and live. This is what Jesus says in John 6:35. Jesus declared, "I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will never go hungry. And he who believes in me will never be thirsty."